Let's do it.
Rolls out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demar Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome to the first annual edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I have my co-host with me here. First and foremost, I want to introduce myself. My name is Jordan Reed, and I have my co-host here, Miles Gorham. Go ahead, Miles.
Miles Gorham here. You can find me at Miles Gorham 85.
Yinka Allende.
How y'all doing?
And my man Jason Brown.
Hey, what's going on? Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason.
Just a quick intro for each and every one of you guys. If you have anything else that you want to say, you can just throw it out in the air. This is our first annual podcast, so I know you guys probably got some things that you're working on or, some extra information that you want to tell the people out there. So, Miles, is there anything you want to tell the people out there, put it out there on the air?
I'm just excited to work with you guys. You guys do a lot of great work, and you guys can expect some articles from me in the next, in the coming future. I got an article coming this week, dropping some of my favorite running backs, receivers, and offensive linemen coming. So I'm excited.
Good. That's awesome. Yinka, you have anything to tell the people out there in the world?
Yeah, this is probably going to be the darkest podcast you all listen to. I got had an article that I've been working on for a while. It's been taking me forever to actually get it done. But I'll drop it before the draft, and then I'll start getting back to my Sam Bradford and the Vikings offense breakdown I've been doing for last couple months. But hopefully once all that's done, I can shed some light, throw out a huge Teddy take that I know I teased a little bit a couple months ago, but it's going to be fire.
Awesome. On the subject of Sam Bradford, we say the best for last. Jason Brown, is there anything you have you want to tell the people, Jason?
Working with you fine gentlemen, I don't hate Sam Bradford off the ground last week. A couple articles up there, so if you haven't read them yet, go ahead and check them out. A couple mini pods from JR. Our man Tim Brown decided he wanted to ride with us as well. So, really been working on an article that should be coming out on Wednesday, the draft commandments. And other than that, should be coming out Thursday. And really, other than that, is just getting stuff up on the site and hopefully giving people some content that they're interested in.
That's awesome. Each and every one of you guys has some fantastic work, in the works right now. And it's draft week, so we're finally here. It's a big event that everybody's looking forward to. Now, switching, transitioning to the actual draft. First topic of debate, it's our first podcast, so we had to start it off with some fire, Mixon. Starting it off with Joe Mixon. The most polarizing prospect of this class, this draft class. Everybody has seen the video. For those of you who have not seen the video, it's a video of him and a female counterpart in a bar. And, he's seen striking that woman in the jaw. There's been obvious, concern over the video, but everybody has their standpoint and how they feel about the video. So I just want to get you guys, each and every one of you guys' thoughts, and then I'll go from there. So, Yinka, you've been an advocate supporter of Mixon on the field, as far as on the field. So what's your thoughts on the whole situation with Mixon and potentially drafting him at 48 or any point in the draft if he's available?
Yeah, it's here's the thing about football and, having morals and all that stuff. It's really hard to have objective opinions when it comes to this because, I'm a musician, and I oftentimes try to tell people, I know it's really hard for sometimes non-musicians, is to separate the artist from the person. And I know that oftentimes looked at as controversial because they're one and the same person, but I try to separate the two. So in the respects of Joe Mixon, I separate what he does on the field versus what he does off the field. Now, again, I think all four of us have seen the video. Everybody else who might listen to this have seen that video. Is one of the most violent things you've probably ever seen done. There's no excuse for it. There's nothing you can really say to defend it, nor should you ever try to defend it. Here's my take as far as things in the NFL when it comes to this kind of stuff. The NFL has to make a decision when it comes to issues of domestic violence or any kind of real assault, all that stuff. They have to make the decision to go to the extreme, which means we're never going to employ these kinds of people ever. Or it needs to go to the opposite end of the spectrum, which I'm a lot more in favor of, where it comes to if you are bringing these high character or low character issue or just character issue type players into the league, you need to set up a program for them to not only get the help that they need so that they can effectively do their job, but put them at the forefront of being advocates for that very issue, you know, that they cause and whatnot. I mean, you look at Ray Rice, he's become a huge advocate as far as violence against women and all that stuff. But I don't think you can have this in between. I'm just not a believer in, oh yeah, well, you suspend them four, six games, 10 games, whatever the case is, and that's all of a sudden going to fix the problem. No, you either need to not employ them or you need to surround them with as much support that they need to successfully do their job. But that being said, I'm a huge Joe Mixon fan on the field. I just watched his tape, broke down some of his tape again earlier today, and he's the notes that I wrote down for him, he's, when it comes to veracity and balance, power, speed, like, he checks all the marks as far as running back. He can really do it all. He's running routes out of the backfield. He's running routes, you know, between the numbers, outside the numbers. He's one of the most dangerous guys with the balls in his hand. He's one of those guys when you want an offensive powerhouse, you know, he can really provide it for you. Now, obviously, I know that he has fumbling issues, that, you know, he's still fairly young, doesn't have as much tread on his tires. But Joe Mixon on the field can be everything that, you know, what the Vikings offense are trying to move towards, especially if you are only going to use Jerick McKinnon for, you know, maybe a few more years. I don't know what the future is for him. And also bringing in Latavius Murray. I don't know what the outcome is going to be that. He might just be a one-year loaner. He might be here for a few years. But it's great to, you know, maybe keep Joe Mixon in that running back by committee. That being said.
Put you on the spot. Pick 48, we're on the clock. No linemen are there that you want. Dan Feeney's gone. You know, Deion Dawkins is gone. Joe Mixon is staring at you on the board. You taking him?
I am not only – well, okay, let me ask you a question. Remind me again who picks at below us.
Like, so I think the Joe Mixon sweepstakes, so to speak, starts at pick number 35 with the Jaguars, assuming they don't take Fournette at four, which is, you know, popular right now for whatever reason. But that's another subject. And at 41 with the Bengals, that's another, you know, hot spot, so to speak, for Joe Mixon. So let's say he makes it past, and 46 with the Colts as well. So,
yeah.
So let's say he makes it past those teams.
I think if he makes it past the Colts and makes it to, I think the Vikings are the next pick that could potentially, after the Vikings pick, I don't think there's a lot of teams after them that could potentially want Joe Mixon. But, you know,
in the second round, you're saying, though, obviously.
Yeah, in the second round, after 48, yeah.
Right.
I think, even so, like, I'm still taking Mixon at 48. I think he's that. He's one of the highest draft grades I've given to a player in a while, specifically at the running back position. And you guys know how I feel about running backs. So I am taking Mixon. I am taking Mixon at 48, just because he kind of fills that playmaking spot that you're really missing, as well as not feeling like you have to reach as far to get another explosive wide receiver. So that's why I'm taking Mixon.
So this is an open question for any of you guys, Miles specifically. You know, we've had guys last year like Tyler Higbee, we've had Frank Clark, and we have Tyreek Hill from last year. And, you know, none of those guys were caught on video for the issues that they had or experienced pre-draft. And we all know Mixon's issue is caught on video, and that kind of makes his deal a little different and similar to a Ray Rice situation. So what's some of the parallels that you see between all those situations, or is there really no parallel?
I mean, there definitely has to be, especially when you're looking at just violent acts in general. You know, Tyreek Hill was kind of more in that similar situation to Joe Mixon's in terms of domestic violence. You know, his at least on paper, from what we've heard, might have been a little bit worse for what his actions were. But again, I know it ended up hurting him in college and his draft stock, you know, going in the fifth round. But I do think being on video is the biggest catalyst to it, because when people actually see something, they can get their facts and their opinions out there. But you know, when there's in a video, you just have your predetermined opinions on the situation, and you kind of just get over it. Especially when, like, you see a guy like Tyreek Hill last year, who played really well as a rookie. I mean, Pro Bowler, you know, a guy who could have sent, you know, in that he kind of had like a Cordero Patterson type of rookie season. He was all over the field, punts, kicks, you know, receiving, rushing. So he did it all. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, the play is the most important thing when it comes to on the field. So it kind of helps overshadow kind of that negativity, which I know some people say that they don't, no matter what will happen, you know, no matter how well Joe Mixon plays wherever he's at, they're not going to change their minds on him. But I kind of have to disagree with that in some cases, that I think people kind of get over it. Yeah, not that absolutely. I'm condoning what he did at all.
Mm. And that's kind of a touchy subject. It's kind of like if you're fighting for Mixon, it makes it seem like what he did makes it seem like it was acceptable, but it really wasn't, no matter what. And that's why you have to differentiate when you talk about on the field versus off the field. It's a very touchy subject, and you know, a lot of people really like Mixon, but they accept what he did was wrong, and some people just can't accept what he did as being wrong or right. So,
and I mean, and to that point, JR, I think that's what, I mean, if we look at our country as a whole, you know, politics aside, because I know where we can go down that rabbit hole. There's just something about like being able to like forgive these players that make these terrible decisions. That doesn't mean we need to forget. You know, because obviously if Joe Mixon finds himself in a year time, 2 years time, whatever time, you know, doing the same kind of stuff, you know, the questions are, should we have even let him, enabled him to play the football in the first place, or all the other stuff. But part of the reason why I am an advocate of him coming to a place like Minnesota is he's going to be surrounded by, I think, players who in the past they had a little bit of trouble with himself. People forget Everson Griffin was a bit of a knucklehead before he came to Minnesota. You know, you surrounded him with guys around guys like, you know, Brian Robinson, you know, and you know, just guys who are going to make sure he stays out of trouble, again, as well as become an advocate for the very issue he had with. I know a lot of people might not believe in the, you know, apology that with the statement that was put out, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's for him to go to someone that he hurt gravely and just sit it down and apologize face to face, no cameras, no lawyers, no any of that stuff. I mean, if she can forgive them, I think the public needs to, you know.
Can I just jump in and say, I feel like we are, I feel like we're putting too much time into thinking about a guy who might not be really worth the trouble, right? So let's say we bring Mixon in, and we feel like we've improved our offensive line a little bit, but we still have some questions along the interior. And one of the things that we can't look past with the Joe Mixon is that for all of his great athleticism, for all of his great highlights and all of those things, Joe Mixon does have some negatives that with an offensive line like the one the Vikings potentially would have going into next year, they could surface. You know, like, he shared a backfield with Samaje Perine, but he was stuffed in the backfield at a much higher rate than Perine. And one of the things I feel like has happened a bit during this draft season is that because of the off-the-field incident that happened with Mixon, the only negative that we ever talk about with Mixon is the off-the-field. You know, you rarely hear anyone talk about his – on-field negatives, the fact that, you know, his vision might be a little questionable, that he tries to win with speed in a way that probably isn't going to cut it when you get to the next level. And, I mean, you guys already know how I feel about kind of the running back position, and I'll be sharing that with kind of the broader public when my article comes out on Thursday. But, you know, Yink had mentioned, you know, he could come in and kind of share a backfield with Jerick McKinnon and Lat Murray. I mean, I don't know that the kind of PR that you're going to get from a Joe Mixon is worth it if he's going to be your third string guy kind of working in with the other guys, you know. And there are some issues to his game that I think could potentially, could potentially lead to him not being the guy that everyone has in their head from the highlight videos.
And that's a great point. And that's something I brought up a couple of weeks ago as well. We're not really thinking, what if it's a double whammy with Mixon, meaning that he brings a bad PR hit and he struggles as a rookie or beyond.
Yep.
Then it's kind of like you're stuck with double jeopardy. You're stuck with a bad player and you're stuck with this cloud of domestic violence hanging over his head. So that's really something that's not really being discussed with Mixon right now. Yes, he's a great player. He's a great college player at Oklahoma. But that doesn't mean it will transition or translate to the NFL. So,
like I guess with that point though, you know, I would throw back at you guys. You know, if the PR issues weren't an issue, I mean, we would still be. I mean, Joe Mixon would still be considered probably a consensus first round pick by a lot of standards. I mean,
those people would all be wrong though.
Draft commandments.
And this is funny because y'all will understand that's one of the biggest of our draft commandments that I just don't agree with. But that being said, again, you know, the way that we look at Joe Mixon, the reason why he's fallen, I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, is obviously because of the PR issues, you know, because there's a lot of people who think that he is the best running back in this draft class. You know, there's Leonard Fournette, there's Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, but there's something about Joe Mixon being able to do what he did basically in 1 year that, you know, some of these other guys had an entire body of work to do.
And so, I think the flip side of that I would say is that I think part of the reason, because it feels like this kind of meteoric change in public opinion about Mixon happened after all of those guys that you just mentioned, except for Christian McCaffrey, disappointed at the combine, right? Like we went in to the combine thinking this was going to be, you know, the greatest running back class of all time, and then a lot of the guys at the top of the class disappointed with their measured athleticism, and then Joe Mixon went out there to that Oklahoma Pro Day and just lit it up, and then all of a sudden kind of the general community was like, oh, Mixon RB1, because he wasn't really getting that kind of hype beforehand for the on the field stuff, but then he lit up that pro day and it was like, Mixon's the guy. We got to have Mixon. Leonard Fournette, who? Dalvin Cook's overrated. Joe Mixon is the guy, right? And so, I don't know. Like, honestly, and I think this leads us to a kind of a perfect segue into our next topic of conversation is that.
Well, but before we transition away from that, but that really happens every year, right? I mean, let's look at 2014. Teddy Bridgewater was considered to be in some circles to be considered the number one overall pick. And then because of not throwing and really running at the combine, he slid. And then on top of his pro day, I mean, he fell considerably. So, you know, this could be, I mean, a good thing and a bad thing. Let's say the Vikings don't get Joe Mixon and he slides up so much that, you know, some guy like the Lions pick him, you know, in the first round or whatever the case is. Then you do have guys like Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, who I think are really good backs sliding into 48. And those are guys that you also have to consider at 48 because, you know, they're not going to slide to the end of the third round. They're going to be there in the second and third round. So, I mean, it's kind of a good and a bad thing for the Vikings. You know, if they want to pick a back at 48, I think they're going to have a choice of one of these top guys. It just matter if they're going to pull the trigger or not.
To kind of go with that Yinka, I think honestly out of the top six consensus RBs in this draft class, you know, Fournette, Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara. I think out of those, you know, I'll say those five guys, I think Kamara and Mixon are the only two that could potentially be there at 48. I don't think we'll see McCaffrey. I don't think we'll see McCaffrey, and I don't think we'll see Fournette for sure going, you know, I think they'll be top 15 picks, honestly.
I don't disagree with that.
So I'm just saying.
Eight to the Panthers.
Yeah, it might happen. Going,
it's like, happening.
Yeah,
it's happening.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to see as many of those, you know, top five backs available at 48. So you're looking at, you know, potentially Cook. We've heard Dalvin Cook might slip a little bit. Otherwise, you know, Alvin Kamara, which, you know, I'm not a really proponent of that. I'm not a big fan of his. And then Joe Mixon would be the other the back out of the top five that potentially be there.
So Yeke, you already kind of hinted at it, and obviously I've said that that I have an article coming on Thursday called the Draft Commandments, in which I lay out the way I see the draft and the way that one should go at the draft. And obviously I knew the don't draft a running back in round one point that I put on there would be one that you definitely did not agree with. So I figured, you know, first podcast, we might as well, you know, have this conversation now about our difference of opinion in terms of the running back position and, you know, bell cow versus running back by committee. And then just a general talk about, you know, how you approach the draft, or if you were running a team, what would be your way of attacking the draft to get the most out of it?
Just me in general?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, we disagree vehemently on the running back point, so we might as well try to figure it out. Obviously, Miles and JR can jump in wherever they want here.
See, this has always been the way that I kind of view the draft. I mean, I think number one, I obviously say, you know, don't ever draft for need, just because you get burned way too often. I think our First Amendment is like everyone's bad at the draft. Like the hit rate on draft classes is so small, especially after you get to, you know, you get to the fourth, fifth, sixth round. Like it's a lot of crapshoot at that point. What you want to hit, in my opinion, is you want to hit very high in the first round, and you want to hit, you know, once you get to that second and third round, you should be in that 50, 60 range, and then after that, you're really hitting that, you know, 50, 40, 30, and it's going down percentage wise. I'm definitely a proponent of getting my quarterback as the last piece of the puzzle. I know it's the most important, but I think that because of the way that the league is established right now, the salary cap, all that other stuff, it's way easier to build a let me preface it with this. How quarterbacks used to be drafted probably like 15, 20 years ago, maybe even not even that far away, is you would draft a quarterback and you would sit behind your kind of established veteran, and then he would kind of hop in, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the, you know, down his contract or whatever. But that's not been happening over the last 4, 5, 6 years. It's just been draft a quarterback, throw him into the wolves, and let him sink or swim. Now, I wrote in a previous article that the way that teams are doing it now more so is you've seen a few teams build an elite top 10, top 5 defense, and then you bring in that quarterback that's going to either manage things or propel you to be a contender. But that's not necessarily how I want to build my team. I'm more or less, yes, I'm building my defense first and then bringing in my QB, because I feel like that's the same exact way of, you know, letting your QB sit because you don't have to manage it as much. But within that, that's why I feel if I get an established running back, whether it be kind of that bell cowy guy, or whether it be the guy who's taking majority of the line share and another guy who does dispel him at times, you know, I'm bringing in all those pieces before I, before I'm like, this is our guy, I'm drafting this quarterback. But that also being said, if there is a guy that's there, like a Teddy Bridgewater, you know, that you have to pull the trigger on, and, you know, maybe it's a year that you felt like you had a guy, and maybe you had a Sam Bradford, maybe Sam Bradford's been our quarterback for the last 4 or 5 years, Teddy Bridgewater's there, you know, Sam has put in decent average numbers, but you want to propel it a little bit more, then you're drafting a Teddy a year or two earlier than you need to be. So, I mean, I'm building my defense first. I do want to build the offensive line, but I think there's this notion that you build the perfect offensive line, then your quarterback's going to be able to survive. That's not necessarily the case, because you can see enough quarterbacks in the league who don't necessarily rely on their O-lines to get them, to give them 3, 4, 5 seconds. They use their own athleticism. They use their ability to buy time in the pocket, just little shifts and sidesteps and stuff to be able to make the play. So I don't necessarily feel like I need to build a top five, even top 10 O-line. So that's why a lot of my resources are going towards the defensive side of the ball. And then when it's all said and done, I'm drafting my guy. So.
Okay. And I feel you on that. And I think that we pretty much align in terms of how to build and going after a defense and trying to establish a top tier defense first, in large part, I think, because building a defense, like I would say, is easier, but if you have good coaching on defense, I feel like you can overcome a lot more than you can if you just have, you know, poor coaching, poor quarterback play on the offensive side of the ball. It's real hard to coach around that if you don't have the guy. But I guess where I disagree in terms of running back early is because of how dependent a running back is on everything else that's going on around them to be successful. So you could have so on a podcast that I listen to, it's fantasy football focused, but the Roto Underworld podcast, one of the things they'll do from time to time is like changing places. So imagine what would happen if you put Ezekiel Elliott in Minnesota with the offensive line that we had last year and Jerick McKinnon in Dallas with the offensive line that they had last year, and how much differently we would think about those two players just based on the situation that's around them and the level of success or lack of success they would have based on their surroundings. And so for me, because a running back requires so many things around them to be going right for them to be successful, and because you'd mentioned hit rate, because running back is a position that busts a lot in the first round, and because running back also is a position that is super volatile from year to year, because running backs get hurt more than any other position, and when they do miss time, they miss more time than every other position. Those are all the reasons that when I look at a running back, I want to make the surroundings around that person as good as possible, but I also want to pay a lot of money for them because there's a high chance that person's going to get hurt. And if my offensive line is great, I can put the next guy in there and he'll be able to go and kill it too. Like Rob Kelly was in there for Washington killing it last year. And that dude is barely an NFL level athlete. Like he's talking like a 4.7 at the running back position. But because Washington has had great receivers, great quarterback play, great offensive line, this dude's able to go in there and kill people. And he's not a very good running back, you know? And so it's situations like that. You know, Dallas went Zeke in round one. Chicago got Jordan Howard went in round five.
Yep, round five.
And he killed it because Chicago invested in their offensive line. So that's kind of where I'm at with the running backs. I guess, J.R., Miles, where y'all at with things?
Real quick rebuttal before you guys get in. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree that you can still find great backs. I mean, but I think that take goes – I mean, yes, it's statistically you can probably find more good backs than you can any other position, obviously, in later rounds and stuff. But I think part of why I'm a little upset with the devaluation of the running back position is when I look at all the things that a running back has to do in today's NFL that they weren't having to do, you know, 25, 30 years ago. You know, running backs nowadays, they have to be the running back and produce at a high level. They have to be pseudo offensive linemen for their quarterbacks and be able to understand blitz pickups, all the other stuff. Some are doing lead blocking type stuff. And you know, in today's NFL, a lot of them have to be wide receivers really out of the backfield, the check downs, and be able to make plays and stuff. So in my opinion, the reason why I disagree with the evaluation of the position is because the position has evolved to being so much more than a guy that you hand the ball off to and that can, you know, pound it between the tackles or bounce it outside. You know, the things that they have to do are so much more. Now, obviously, because you see, you know, when you see like a situation like in Pittsburgh with You know, Le'Veon Bell going down and D'Angelo Williams stepping in and being able to produce. Let's not forget that D'Angelo Williams was not a horrible back in Carolina. You know, he was a productive back there as well too. So I mean, yeah, there is an aspects of plug and play. I'm not going to disagree with that, but I also look at, you know, the position has drastically evolved from what it was and used to be, which is why someone like Adrian Peterson is struggling to find work.
Yeah, and I guess my last counter is that really, I mean, when you're talking about all the things that can be done there's really only two guys in the league that are doing all of those things. I mean, you got David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell, who are kind of the do-everything running backs. And all the things you called out are all very important things, but it doesn't mean that you have to have one guy doing all of them, right? So, I mean, what you see across the league is that you can have a successful in a running game. You can have successful passing out of the backfield. You can just spread the risk of injury across, you know, two guys or three guys and have guys come into specialized type roles where you're not investing that high draft capital in a position that, you know, is largely replaceable based on what's going on from a situation.
I guess my point was more or less like, if I am taking a guy high, you know, a guy that does maybe a specific skill set very well and maybe does other skill sets more mediocre, because what you see in the league is, yes, you see a lot of guys who are kind of just average. You know, they're average runners, they're average blockers, they're average pass catchers. But some of these backs don't really do anything that well. And you look at someone like Dave Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, who, frankly, do everything well. That's why I'm kind of looking at, you know, if you do take a running back high, find the thing, obviously, just like any other position, if he does a specific skill set, one or two skill sets really well, then obviously, in my opinion, his draft stock increases because of that. If he is a really good pass catcher in a league that is primarily, you know, running backs being able to catch the ball out of the backfield, or maybe he can run between the tackles, or he is a good pass blocker. Like, that's what I'm considering when it's just like, yeah, you can get another guy that can just fit that in, but he might just be average at best.
Okay. I'll let it go so Miles and JR can get in.
I just think the running back position is extremely valued. I kind of compare it to the big man in the NBA, and I kind of compare it to Jahlil Okafor's situation with the 76ers. How long have they been trying to, you know, get rid of Jahlil Okafor just because, you know, his value and the things that he does is not necessarily needed as much in the league anymore, because it's a changing league, and that's how I feel about taking running backs early. I know a little stat I put up a couple weeks ago, or actually during playoff time, the only first-round back, starting back in the playoffs for any playoff team was Ezekiel Elliott. So that stat alone should show you just how teams actually feel about, you know, the running back position and how devalued it is. And even the two Super Bowl teams, we've seen the rotation for the New England Patriots, and they had a bunch of no-names outside of LeGarrette Blount. And we see Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman, you know, a third and a fourth-round pick come in and produce very well. So I just think it's a devalued position across the league as a whole. And, you know, following by our commandments, I just don't think you should take a running back before the third round.
Well, with that said, I mean, obviously part of the devaluation is because of the overvaluation of another position, the quarterback position. Now, I mean,
I'd probably say wide receiver just because of the way offenses have been transitioning. I'd say wide receiver is the one position that's getting the bigger value than running back, just because it's more of a pass happy league now.
Yeah.
But I'll let you go ahead.
No, the only point was just like, obviously the league has made it easier for that, you know, for that very purpose, you know, for it to be easier. Let's not pretend that there haven't been rules, there haven't been shifts in the way that the league has operated to make it unquestionably easier for offenses to open up a lot more, to protect wide receivers, to protect quarterbacks, you know. Because, I mean, think about it this way. If the league was what it was, you know, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have your quarterbacks. You would have to be drafting quarterbacks just as often because they would be getting hurt. They'd be tearing the ACLs at just as the same rates that they were. I mean, you would see Tom Brady's go down. You would see Aaron Rodgers go down because they were getting hit. They're not getting hit the way that they used to be able to do. So, again, it just boils down to that's why I still – and such an advocate of keeping running backs, just to dispel the pressure that is to be an NFL starting quarterback.
to kind of transition from that to Yanko for, I guess, kind of my my draft strategy. If I'm going from scratch, I'm kind of going trenches. I'm going offensive and defensive line. I think that's the best way to approach building a team, because those are the two most important key elements, obviously, besides quarterback. But if you build those two elements, everything from there kind of becomes a little easier, I think, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You build that offensive line, you let everybody else have a little more opportunity and time to do things. You know, like you said, the quarterbacks and running backs, that makes their lives a lot easier, makes wide receivers quarterbacks finding wide receivers downfield a lot easier because they have more time to do it. So for me, I'm going in the trenches. I'm working through that. And then obviously, you know, for me, I'm drafting a quarterback at least every other year, and I'm always bringing in competition. I think it's so important. So many teams for so long were paying a lot of money to back up veteran quarterbacks. And as important as I think the backup position is because the quarterback position itself is so important, I'd be more inclined to drafting my de facto backup quarterback high in the draft and paying him a lot less money than paying my backup quarterback $6-7 million, like you saw, you know, Chase Daniel when he signed with the Eagles, and you know, Nick Foles, who just, you know, re-signed back with the Eagles, and you know, we paid Matt Castle quite a bit of money back, you know, a few years back. So to be the backup quarterback. So for me, I'd rather find you know, my backup quarterback in the draft and allow them to grow and develop at the same time while they're being the backup quarterback. But someone who's good enough to come in and potentially jump in and play for a few games if your quarterback gets hurt.
So, but I mean, that's
our resident quarterback. Can you maybe shed some light on us why competition is good at every other position in football, but teams in the NFL or just teams in general seem so against the idea of competition at the quarterback position? Like, if you don't have a great quarterback, why don't more teams actually do what the Seahawks did and actually have an open competition and let the best man win and then go from there?
Well, I firmly believe, like, this happens at every level of football, no matter if it's Little League, middle school, high school, college, it doesn't matter. If you don't have, like, a guy that's entrenched or penciled in as the franchise guy, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team and among a fan base. It just happens no matter wherever you go. And we actually see that right now happening with the Vikings. You know, you have a guy like Teddy, not to get into the Teddy and Sam debate, but, you know, right now, Teddy can be penciled in as the backup whenever he does become healthy. And if Sam does struggle this year or he doesn't play, you know, accustomed like he did last year, we're in this whole situation again with, you know, the backup quarterback being, you know, the guy that every fan loves or every fan wants just because they're just simply tired of just seeing that guy play. And let's go back to the Christian Ponder days. Everybody knew Joe Webb wasn't a great quarterback, but we still wanted to see him out there, because it was always a mystery what he could do. We just really didn't know what he could do, so to speak. So the backup quarterback is always the guy that, you know, he's always the most popular guy in the locker room and amongst the fan base, just because it kind of feels like it provides a spark and it's like a breath of fresh air when that guy comes in, just because you're so tired of seeing that starter play. So I think that's why, you know, the backup is always the most popular guy. But it's an interesting debate. You know, I'm completely in agreement with Miles as far as draft philosophy, you know, building from the inside out. That's how I think a team should be built. And, you know, I'm a big guy of, you know, building those trenches up, because it can win you two or it can lose you two games. We've seen that last year with the Vikings. You know, their offensive line and the defensive line, they lost us two games last year as a whole. I know I can think of the Colts game right off the top of my head. They ran the ball on us all day long. They kept us in base. So, you know, just building from the inside out, I think that could be a key component.
I know I asked you guys about this as far as his take and whatnot, and, you know, you saw what Washington did a few years ago and double dipping as far as getting a, you know, starting RG3 and then getting a Kirk Cousins. I'm even almost a firm believer in two things. Double dipping high, you know, if you do have, I mean, it's going to be weird to say, but if you do have a strong QB class and maybe you're torn between two guys, drafting both guys. And I mean, think about how much you would control what happens in the league when you have two guys who are maybe maybe not elite prospects, but are very, very high. You obviously you control draft implications, you control your trade implications, all that stuff. You control a lot of capital in the league because you have two of the most in a position that's obviously considered to be the most important position in the league, and you have two guys at that spot. Or also the other take for me is, you know, it's weird to think like a team like Green Bay, you know, should they start considering trying to actually draft not a successor, but an actual guy that's going to push Aaron Rodgers to play at his high. He's already playing at a ridiculously high level, but even pushing him to even believe that he could potentially lose his spot. Ain't no one going to take Aaron Rodgers' position. He knows that because of how good he is. But to even think that there could be a guy that could push him to that level, I mean, that's only going to create actual competition. Because right now what we're doing is we're drafting for backups for these elite starters. We're not drafting to actually like supplant some of these elite starters, which is, I know it's a really out there take, but I mean, if I'm thinking about trying to improve my quarterback room, that's where I'm going.
Well, just in general, like you had talked about, it's not even to me just pushing the starter, the elite starters. It's having a set established good backup quarterback behind your quarterback because it's the most important position in sports. What if your quarterback goes down for, you know, three games? I'd rather not, you know, and that's why I think we've seen teams pay guys like a Chase Daniel $7 million to be their backup quarterback because they feel he could win them, you know, one, two, three games if he had to, or, you know, go in there and do that. But then you look at teams like New England who have over the last, what, 3 or 4 years have drafted two quarterbacks in the first three rounds, you know, with Jimmy Garoppolo a few years back. And then last year they drafted the North Carolina State quarterback who's
Jacoby Brissett.
Thank you, Jacoby Brissett, who, you know, I don't think they expected all three guys to play last year, you know, but Brissett did end up winning them a game. So, again, it's just such an important position, and now they have three quarterbacks, and they're only paying – and two of those three quarterbacks aren't being paid very well. So, I don't know. I just look at it as an important position to always have an established, you know, two to three guys in that room.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting debate. And, you know, just moving on now, you know, we talk about the draft being this week, starting Thursday. We're not really sure if the Vikings will have a pick or not. Who knows? Rick Spielman might surprise us.
We might. We got to keep it locked.
They call him Trader Rick for a reason. So we don't know, but we might have a pick Thursday, but we know we have a ton of picks, you know, Friday and Saturday. So who are some guys you like to highlight? Or let's just do a quick rapid fire of some mid or late round guys that, you know, you love right now. Starting off with you, Yinka.
I was breaking down some tape, obviously, and I know that quarterback is a position that I still don't feel like it's that secure. I mean, whether it be for the future or whether it be for kind of the short term, immediate. A guy I'm really liking, Brad Kaya, Miami. Dude can ball. Like, I mean, you know, I know you hear about Deshaun Washington, Sean Kaiser, Trubisky, like all those guys, but like I think a lot of people are sleeping on Kaya. Like the things that I saw from him, he has good ball placement. He kept his base under pressure. I mean, a lot of intangibles that, you know, just like little things that I like to see in a quarterback, he was doing. So I mean, if he's there in the fourth, if he's there late third, you know, fourth, I might use one of my picks to take him.
Yeah, Kaya is definitely an intriguing option. You know, everybody likes to say bye Felicia with him. his mom is Felicia from the movie Friday. If you haven't seen it, it's a movie I highly recommend. If you have never – you never knew that, Yinka? Wow.
I didn't know that.
His mom crazy. Is Felicia. It's Felicia from Friday. He says, and you know, in Gruden QB camp, he goes in detail about it and how much he heard about it. So his teammates kind of gave him a lot of junk talk to him. So who's some mid or late round guy that you like, Miles?
Yeah, I'll give you three. A couple guys I like. Katie Cannon. I know I've talked about on Twitter with some people, and where I think the Vikings are lacking besides offensive line, obviously, and potentially, you know, a third running back, is that home run threat, that deep threat at wide receiver. And again, we know Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs have speed, so we know those guys can get downfield. But it's not where their biggest strengths lie. I think those guys excel really well in the the short and intermediate routes. And I know the stat that Adam Thielen was one of the top rated deep threats in the game last year. So I totally understand that he can do it. He's capable of doing it. I just don't think it's like it's his biggest strength in terms of what he could do in this offense. So I think a guy like KD Cannon out of Baylor, I think especially early on as a rookie coming in, I'm not asking my deep threat to be an every down player. I'm not asking him to play, 30, 40 snaps. I'm asking him just be effective playing in a limited role, especially a guy like KD Cannon early on, who I think, would be a mid-round pick. He's not a guy I'm asking to play a lot. Put him on hitches, goes, posts, double moves. Let him do some of that stuff while he's still learning, and try to hit and try to scare the defense. In the backfield. When he's on the field, we don't really have a guy right now who scares safeties right now deep. There's nobody really to respect in that aspect. So I think a guy like KD Cannon could be really good at that, especially with his 4.44 140. So I'm a big fan of KD Cannon in the mid rounds.
Yeah, and you mentioned a guy like KD Cannon, and he's very similar to a guy like Taylor Gabriel from the Falcons. He only plays 25, 30 snaps a game, but he's making plays, and he was made famous by that outstanding route that he made Malcolm Butler fall on. So
right,
you could definitely see a guy like KD Cannon coming in and just taking the top off the defense and just providing that field stretcher that the Vikings really need over the top. But moving on, Jason, who's some guys you got that you like in the mid to late rounds?
Well, anyone who follows me on Twitter will know that I am one of the leaders of the Jeremy McNichols Hive. I think that the Jeremy McNichols offers, from a skill set perspective, many of the things that that Yanka likes about Joe Mixon, and that he's someone that you'd be able to get a little bit later on in the draft. He tested very, very well at the combine, and from a production standpoint, he was one of the best over the last couple of years. Played wide receiver in high school, great hands. Boise basically ran their entire offense through him. If you go on playerprofiler.com, his dominator rating as a running back was 89th percentile. They basically did everything in that offense through him. He can go out and run routes. He can, get you those tough yards between the tackles. In terms of kind of the off the field and all that, he doesn't come with any of the baggage that might come with the Mixon. And from a value perspective, which Miles loves, you can get him probably in the fourth or fifth round versus having to spend that earlier capital. So McNichols is my guy, and he's someone that I'd be very interested in. I know his skill set looks like it would be one that mirrors Jerick McKinnon, but he comes with similar athleticism to McKinnon, but is more polished in terms of playing the running back position and offers that receiving ability that obviously in today's NFL is huge.
Is he a guy, Jason, who can kind of run between the tackles a little bit better than what we've seen from like a Jerick McKinnon?
I mean, so I also am a Jerick McKinnon truther. I don't think he's as bad between the tackles.
I'm not saying that. But.
Yeah, But I think that coming in terms of some of the nuances of the position, I think that McNichols, would be ahead of Jet in that. And that just because he has played the position longer, like Jerick was basically a great athlete that they've been teaching to be a running back since he got to the league. Whereas McNichols was coming in with a lot of production as strictly a running back coming into the league. So there's some nuances of the position that I'd imagine that the McNichols as a prospect is ahead of Jerick McKinnon when Jerick McKinnon was a prospect.
It's definitely an interesting debate. Everybody really wants a running back in that second or third round, so it'll be interesting to see exactly when they do decide to select a running back. McNichols is a guy that can be added in the fourth or fifth round. I've seen him mocked a lot in the fifth round on most mock drafts, so he's a guy that they could definitely wait around for. But, a guy that I would love to highlight as a mid to late round guy is Ryan Switzer from the University of North Carolina. I'm all about value in those late rounds. I think as a late rounder that you have to have some, ability to play some types of special teams, because early on you're not going to have a key role or be a key contributor. So, Switzer returns punts, he returns kicks, and he's an outstanding slot receiver. And you talk about, keeping guys like Diggs and Thielen on the outside, which I think they both are capable of playing outside receiver. and you have a guy like Switzer in the slot, you know, he's a guy compared to a guy like Cole Beasley from the Cowboys. You know, he's not going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, but he's a guy that's going to, you know, destroy the middle of the field just because of how shifty and how fast he is. He's a guy to control the, you know, the short, the intermediate routes, which is what Shermer's offense is all about. And that's really what he was in North Carolina as well. A very similar, you know, quick passing type of passing game. So I think a guy like Ryan Switzer, he fills three immediate holes that you have right now. You know, that's a slot receiver. You know, we talk about a guy like Jarius Wright. We're not really sure if he's going to be here.
He'll be here.
We're not sure, but you know, he's the oldest receiver in the room right now. So I just think getting a slot receiver and a guy that can contribute on special teams, you're filling immediate holes right now. So, you know, Switzer, he broke an NCAA record punt return. So he's a natural born punt returner, and that's something that we really need right now. You talk about a guy like Marcus Sherrills, but he doesn't really provide value at corner. We all know that he's listed as a corner, but I think he's just, I call him a special teams guy. So,
yep, that's,
you know,
all.
A guy like, you know, and it's saving you another roster spot as well, because, you know, Switzer can fill two holes as opposed to, you know, Sherrills taking up a corner and a special team spot. So I think a guy like Ryan Switzer would be an outstanding addition in the, you know, the fifth round, so to speak. So everybody has some really interesting, you know, prospects that they highlighted in the fourth or fifth round. But now let's get back to you guys. What's some upcoming projects that you have, you know, in the works? It's draft week, so I know you guys are excited to get your fingers working on those keyboards, and I know you got some fire coming out this week. So, Yinka, what's some stuff, what's some upcoming projects that you got coming out this week or in the future?
I'm going to try to get done with my article tonight, drop that hopefully next few days. I think you and I, all of us that talked about, you know, maybe doing a podcast maybe the night of round one, since we don't have a pick. We maybe have a pick. We don't know. But we could definitely do that. But other than that, just catch me on Twitter. I'll keep dropping stuff, especially now that the draft's over. So,
Miles, you got anything coming up this upcoming week?
Yeah, for the I Don't Hate Sam Bradford website, I'll be dropping a little in-depth work I'm doing on one of my guys, Katie Cannon, Curtis Samuel, and then Pitt O-lineman Dorian Johnson. So a lot of good notes watching those guys film. Those are guys I'm pretty excited about, especially in those in the mid rounds, early to mid rounds. So So and then after that, you know, podcasting with you guys.
Good, that's outstanding. Jason, you got anything upcoming?
In the immediate short term, it's going to be trying to figure out how to edit all this wonderful fire that you guys have put together on this podcast, and it's something that we can get out to the public in the next couple of hours. So that's what I'll be doing in the short term. After that article on Thursday, probably doing some post-draft recap stuff with you guys over the weekend. That's pretty much it for me.
Oh yeah, and go read Jason's article, obviously, in JR's mini pod that they've been dropping and stuff. That stuff is fire, especially Jason's article. I actually just got through it. I know I'm bad, but pray for me. But he threw some fire takes out in there, so I know that everybody here is doing some great stuff. So if you have a second on your way to work, all that stuff is in the JR silky smooth voice that he'd be dropping. That KMOJ 89.9 voice that he be throwing out. So, yeah.
And just for myself, this week upcoming, tomorrow I got my offensive positional rankings dropping for the entire draft class. And on Tuesday, I'll be releasing my defensive positional rankings. Just a little background about that. It's just the top 15 players at each position. I actually give an NFL comp, present-day NFL comp for each guy. So, and a little mini scouting reports on each guy, I think the Vikings will target, and some other stuff coming for the I Don't Hate Sam Bradford blog coming up. So a lot of exciting, you know, content from each and every person on this podcast and each and every person on this website as well. So just wrapping up, you know, I'd like to thank each and every one of you guys for tuning in. And, you know, this is the first of many coming from the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And we're going to have some fire takes for you guys. We're going to keep it real 100% of the time. We're going to say what's on our mind. So this is the first of many. The next one will be dropping after the first night of the draft, assuming that we don't have a pick. But we might. We don't know.
It's exciting, y'all. You got to admit, it's exciting to think as the way that Rick Spielman, I'm definitely against, obviously, trading up to the first round. But, you know, maybe be closing for the night and all of a sudden you see that crazy trade with, like, New England or something, and then Vikings are on the clock. It's going to be crazy, y'all.
So we shall see. You know, it's exciting times. It feel like Christmas week coming. So I know on Wednesday I'm going to feel like a kid trying to go to sleep on Christmas Eve. So we're all excited, you know, on this podcast. But I want to say once again on behalf of, you know, Jordan Reed, myself, Nika Allende, Miles Gorman, and Jason Brown, we'd like to thank each and every one of you guys for tuning in. And be aware for the next edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast.
Let's do it.